My grandmother used to say that it is definitely possible not to pray enough, but totally impossible to pray too much. So we're going to pray a little bit more. Heavenly Father, use me tonight as an instrument of thy will. Speak through me, so whatever results that you desire here tonight will be accomplished in all things. Thy will, not mine, be done. Amen. What I love most about AA, by the time I'm done, you're going to know I love everything about AA, is the simplicity of it. You know, the last thing that Dr. Bob said standing on his porch when Bill Wilson was leaving the house was, "For God's sake, Bill, don't louse this thing up. Keep it simple." And I love the simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not a guy that can tell you pages and you know, paragraphs of where stuff is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught that this is a design for living. It's not an exercise in memorization. But somewhere in that book, in the chapter Working with Others, there's a line that bottom lines the simplicity of AA for me. And what that line simply says is this: remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. The single most important fact in my life as I stand here tonight, and the only reason that I'm standing here or anywhere else tonight, is that I got a power in my life that I choose to call God, who does for me one day at a time what I could never do for myself. If I had the power to quit drinking on my own, I'd have never come to AA. Why should I? I didn't come here because I was bored. I didn't come here because I was lonely. I came here just because I couldn't live sober. I couldn't live sober, right? And that's the reason that I prayed before I introduced myself from behind the podium. Left to my own devices, I guarantee you I would have destroyed myself years ago. That prayer reminds me of two things that I believe are vital and crucial to me staying here. First and foremost, the reason I'm here tonight is to do God's will, not mine. And it also serves to remind me that he is in charge here tonight. And as always, thank God, I am not. Good evening. My name is Kent Coleman. I'm an alcoholic. I was raised right. If my mother was here, she'd jump up and say, "You ain't turn out right." But anyway, I was raised right, and I want to demonstrate that. I want to thank the committee for your kindness and your hospitality. We worked on this for a couple years because I usually schedule a couple years out. And we didn't do it last year, and when they called and said this is the date, I had it open. So, you know, I know that it was meant for me to be here. I want to thank you for staying in contact with me, being an example of how service is done in this fellowship. Thank you for the gift basket in the room. It is an honor and a privilege to participate at any level in the life-giving, life-saving, life-changing fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's making coffee and setting up at my home group, cleaning up at my home group, going into the detoxes, the jails, the institutions, all of the things I have been privileged to do. Anytime I get a chance to do something, I always want to say thank you, because what you're doing is you're allowing me to live in the answer today, right, instead of living in the problem. So thank you very much for having me here. I'm like the little boy who came home from his first day of school and his daddy met him at the front door and said, "Well, did you learn anything?" And the little boy said, "Apparently not. They told me I had to come back tomorrow." And that's what it's been like for me and Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Y'all just keep telling me to come back tomorrow, right? You know, Dr. Bob said something. He said, there's only two kinds of people you got to watch in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's those who are staying sober and those who are not. Right. And far before I ever knew that Dr. Bob said that, I'm a street guy. And when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't come here with knowledge of it or AA etiquette. I didn't know what an open meeting or a closed meeting was. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I didn't know what a home group was. I didn't know a big book from a Rand McNally Atlas when I came up in here. And I had the word mother wrapped around every other word I said. Right. I didn't come here from Sunday school. And I'm very grateful for the longtime members of Alcoholics Anonymous who live where I live, who never made me feel less than, who never made me feel uncomfortable or unwanted here, who practiced the principles of patience, tolerance, kindness, understanding, and love, who practiced the four absolutes of honesty, humility, unselfishness, love. They taught me all these things. They taught me all these things. You know, I'm a guy who, I see better than I hear, right? And so, you know, if you're a street guy like me, how you stay alive in the street is by doing what? Watching and listening, right? And so I came in AA, and that's what I did. See, I remember what it's like to be new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never been here before. I don't know y'all, right? And I come from a life where you don't trust people that you don't know. I come from a life you don't trust people that you do know, right? And some of y'all know what I'm talking about, right? And so I come up in here and I don't know y'all, right? So I start watching and listening. And it did not take me long to see very distinctly two groups of people in here. The first group was in and out, in and out. And I'm not knocking people who have trouble getting this. Some of our best members did not get this right away. We don't shoot our wounded in here. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you what I saw when I came here. I saw people in and out, in and out. Every time they came back in from being out, they looked worse than the last time they came back in from being out. I didn't see nobody come back up in here passing out $50 bills and driving a new BMW and talking about how good it was out there. They came in here and they talked of being restless, irritable, and discontented, and full of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. We'll call them group one. Then there was another group of people, and if you've been at this roundup any amount of time, or you just go to local meetings, you'll see that second group of people in action, making coffee, setting up tables and chairs, putting out the literature, greeting new people at the door. They talk about God, big book, steps, spirituality, and enjoying life sober. We'll call them group two. Now, my story is going to prove definitely that I am no rocket scientist, but it sure looked to me like the people in group two had a better deal than the people in group one. So let's keep this simple. If you're new in here, we'll keep this simple. So I asked myself, what do these people do that these people don't? Fair question, is it not? All right? So these people in group two, they seem to have some things in common. They had something called a sponsor. Now, I didn't know what a sponsor was in AA. I'd never been here before. I used to play softball for Cronin's Tavern. They was our sponsor. And I got free beer and clothes out of that deal, so I thought, well, maybe I better find me a sponsor in here, right? And y'all sat me down and you taught me what a sponsor was. And I'm going to do a workshop on sponsorship here tomorrow, but a sponsor is somebody who has working knowledge and experience with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined by the founders in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, who is willing to walk me page by page through that process, but just as importantly, in my opinion, even more importantly, is a living demonstration of those principles in their life, who can show me what my life can be like if I do what they do. Notice I said working knowledge and experience. I came here with a college degree. I know how to read. I don't know how to live sober. That's what I don't know how to do. I have sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous today. I'm sponsored by Bob D. in Las Vegas. I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous by the late Bill Finley in Lorain, Ohio, and Kenny Bombalicki in Cleveland. Bill died 52 years sober. He died last year. Kenny, and I talked to Kenny last night for about 2 hours. Kenny has 44 years now. Bob has 38. I've been very blessed. But the amount of time, length of time of sobriety is the least impressive thing I can tell you about them three guys. Well, you know what? To this day, when I talk to them, they never ask me, where are you going? You know what they do? They tell me where they're going. See, the power of example in here, right? Bill was sober when I was born, for God's sake. And I could never keep up with him until Parkinson slowed him down. He gave his life to doing this thing and helping others, right? So the power of example. If you're new in here, I want to share something with you. Having a sponsor is a terrific thing. Being sponsorable is even better, right? I sponsor a lot of men in AA around the states. I sponsor guys overseas. I work intensively with other alcoholics. That's the way my sponsors have all been. That's what I do. I work with somebody asked me the other day, Kent, how many people do you sponsor? I said, oh, about half of them. Right? And you know what I'm talking about, right? Because sponsorship is like anything else in Alcoholics Anonymous. You will get out of it what you put into it. I like to do this sometime when we got a decent crowd. We got one here tonight. With all of the people in this room right now who would be willing to sponsor a new person in AA, please raise your hand. Thank you very much. If you're new and you don't have a sponsor, I just hooked you up. Right? No one ever need leave an AA meeting without the benefit of sponsorship. And I want you to understand something. See, I remember what it was like to be new. When I was new, I don't know you. I don't know if you got 10 years or 10 minutes, nor do I know whether or not you're willing to help a guy like me who didn't even feel he deserved any help. So if you're new here tonight, the help that you need just identified itself. What you do with that information is entirely up to you. No, I talked at a thing in Mexico a couple of months ago, and I did that. And so after the meeting, a young lady came up, very young lady, probably in her late teens, came up to me, and she was talking very rapidly to me in Spanish. And I can't understand very rapid Spanish. I can't understand very slow Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, right? And I got a guy standing next to me who's an interpreter, and she's pointing at this older lady. And the guy standing next to me says, Kent, she's trying to tell you that she just asked that lady to be her sponsor. See, I don't come in here and assume. When I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, I walk in here as I am. Nobody sprinkled pixie dust on my head, and now all of a sudden, I understand all this stuff. Okay? So if you're new here, right, you can get yourself a sponsor here tonight if you don't have one. Another thing they had in common, they had something called a home group. Right, I was one of them new people. You ever talk to a new person, you know, and ask them, what's your home group? And this is the answer you get. All the groups are my home group. You ever get that? You ever get that, right? When I was new, I loved AA meetings, right? I went to 3 AA meetings a day. So that was always my answer. And the deal is this. No, I don't have a home group because I don't want y'all getting too close to me. I heard a guy say at a meeting one time, if you don't show up at your home group, they'll call you up. They might even come over your house. I said, not on your life, buddy. Right? Because I'm still, right? I didn't come here. Alcoholism is a disease that thrives on separation. And when I come in here, what it does to me is it makes me start to compare rather than identify. Because it don't like y'all. It don't like no steps. It doesn't want me here. So my head is trying to get me to look for differences rather than similarities. Right? And y'all got home groups? I ain't got one, right? Because I ain't like y'all, because that's what my head is telling me, right? And so finally I got a sponsor, and he changed that. He says, you'll have a home group by the weekend. And I have a home group today. It's the Venice Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sandusky, Ohio. We began as an Oxford group meeting in 1938. Well, we've been around for a while. We've been in AA meetings since 1942. And I want to share something with you about my home group. My home group ain't the best group in the world, and ain't the worst group in the world. It's just an AA group. One of the things that Bill taught me when I was new, he said, son, it's okay to stop competing now. See, prior to AA, everything in my life I lived on a better than or less than basis. And when I live better than or less than, here's what happens in my life. I'm never a part of anything. Remember when I just talked about separation? Okay, my group is the best group for me to be at, and I hope you feel that way about yours. But that don't make my group better than your group, and that don't make your group better than mine. Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. As soon as I separate myself from you as better than or less than, here's my experience. I'm headed for that door, and I don't even know it. Right? My home group, when I joined that group, there was four men in that group that got sober between 1944 and 1946. And I was sober about a year, and I went to Dr. Bob's house for the first time in Akron, right? And I came back, and I mean, I just had a spiritual awakening at Dr. Bob's house, right? And I come back, and I'm lit up like a Christmas tree. And I came to the home group, and I said to John, guess where I went? He said, where'd you go? I said, I went to Dr. Bob's house. He said, did you now? I said, yep. I said, you ever been there, John? He said, uh-huh. I said, did you like it there? He said, I did. He said, Bob and Ann were very kind to us. These are the guys that were in my home group. Those were the men in my home group. So I joined this home group. I signed the book. And old Herb sat there, and he goes, I got some bad news for you, son. We ain't interested in your autograph. He said, we want your service. Threw some keys on the table. He said, these are the keys to the coffee locker. Next week, I want you here at 6 o'clock. Now, this is an 8:30 meeting. 6 o'clock to make the coffee, set up the tables and chairs, and put out the literature. I looked at Herb like he had three heads. I said, how long am I going to have to do that? He looked at me and said, we'll get back to you. 4 years later, I asked him again, how long do I have to do that, right? And so I got the coffee job, right? And it's a big meeting, 250 people on Friday night at that time. And we had 300 cup coffee makers, right? And so there's a problem with this. I don't know how to make coffee. Right? And God forbid I should let you know that or anybody else, because here again, what would you think of me? Remember, I'm brand new. My entire life has been lived through what? Seeking the approval and acceptance of people, things outside of me. That's what I'm made of when I'm new. And what would you think of me? You're going to think I'm stupid, right? So for the next 6 nights, I don't sleep. Coffee. I'm at work. I worked at Ford Motor Company. I'm on the line. I'm pictured in my head. People drinking the coffee, driving, dying on the floor, right? Right? Because I can't ask for help. If you knew it here, there's a message here. Hey, ask for help. Right? So Friday night finally comes. I get to the church at 6 o'clock. The Lincolns and the Cadillacs are in the back because that's what these guys are driving. Right? I worked for a motor company. Didn't even have a car. That's true. True story. Not easy to accomplish, but I got her done. So I get to the meeting. And I walk in, and all four of them are sitting there at this table. I'm thinking to myself, they don't trust me. Of course they didn't. I wasn't trustworthy, right? So I walked in, and I set up the tables and chairs. I put that literature out there, and now it's coffee time. Now, I told you I went to college. And inside of 100 cupper, there's a line with a 100. So I figured that's how much water you put in there. Now, that's what a college education will do for you. So I put the water in there. I set it up on the table. I get them all up, right? Now we come to the moment of truth. I go get the basket that the coffee goes in. I'm slowly walking over to where the coffee is. And old Herb says, hey, Kent, come here for a minute. So I walk over to Herb. He said, Kent, I don't know about you. He said, but when I make 100 cupper, he said, I like to put the coffee right about to that line in the basket. He said, how do you do it? I said, I do it just like that, Herb. I put it right to that line right there. Is anybody following me? The men in my home group never made me feel less than. They knew I didn't know. I challenge you, I ask you, when a newcomer come to your home group, when they leave, if I was standing outside and ask them what they found at your group, what would they tell me? What would they tell me? I was ignored. They clapped when I stood up, and then they got up and went home. Thank God for the longtime members of AA when I got here who didn't do that to me, because I would have died. I'm not the potential alcoholic or hard drinker it talks about in the book. I am the real alcoholic. And without this, I'm dead. See? So when somebody comes to my home group, Bill taught me when I was new, he said, like a shark, you know, chasing fresh blood in the water, go get him. And that's what we do. Guy come to my home group a couple weeks ago, raised his hand, said he was new after the meeting. I had to rescue the guy. He almost tore the clothes off of him. They had him backed up against the wall like this. I reached in. I got sponsees, right? I reached in. I said, come here, man. I got you. Don't worry about it. They won't hurt you. They mean well, right? What are we doing when they come here? And that's what I like to call the total package in Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship. Big book and steps, home group and a service commitment. In my experience, which is the only thing I'm allowed to share from behind the podium, I have yet to meet an alcoholic of our type. And if you don't know what an alcoholic of our type is, read the book. I've yet to meet an alcoholic of our type who has taken that package, applied it to their life a day at a time to the best of their ability. If you're new in here, I'm going to take you off the hook. We don't have to do this perfect. All I have to do is the best I can today with what I have. That's all God requires of me. Doesn't require perfection. I have yet to see one of us do that and go back out and take a drink. I ain't seen it happen one single time, and I've been here for a while. On the flip side of the coin, I have yet to see an alcoholic of our type come in here, ignore those things, and stay sane, sober, or happy for any appreciable length of time. The simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those who do get, and those who don't, and it's just that simple. I never sat in a bar room, watched you drink, and thought that somehow I was going to get drunk watching you drink. That's just as ridiculous as me coming in here, sitting in a chair, watching you do all that, and think that somehow magically it's going to rub off on me. Those who do get, those who don't, and it's just that simple. 12-step don't say haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of attendance. There was an old time in our town, Mr. Willie Witherspoon. Mr. Willie walked up to me after a meeting one day, looked at me and said, boy, sitting in a chicken coop don't make you no chicken. And walked away, right? And I got that. I'm just simple enough for me to get, right? I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know what that was when I got here either. I've had a definition of alcoholism. You ever had it, right? I like to say my definition of alcoholism over the years was a sliding definition, because as my disease progressed, I kept fitting my definitions. So every time I fitted, I'd have to lower the bar a little bit. You asked me when I was a teenager what an alcoholic was, I'd have said somebody that's drunk every day. I have no idea where I got that from, but that's what I would have told you. As a teenager, I became a daily drinker. That ain't it. Thought about it some more. I said an alcoholic is somebody who misses work, school, practice, important things in life because of alcohol. It interferes with your priorities in life. That's an alcoholic. As a teenager, alcohol began to interfere with work, school, practice, important things in my life. That ain't it. Thought about it a little more. I finally figured it out. Alcoholic is somebody who goes to jail because of drinking. That's it, right? As you hear in a few minutes, I really had to change that one. By the time I came up in here, my definition of an alcoholic, y'all remember Otis on the Andy Griffith Show? Y'all remember Otis? Out his clothes was all wet and wrinkly. He had a pint of cheap wine on him. He's in and out of jail. I don't remember Otis working any place, right? I spoke at a conference over in England, and I said that to them. I said, y'all remember Otis on the Andy Griffith Show? And 2,000 people went, no. Set me back about 10 minutes, right? Like, really? I thought they had cable, right? I didn't know. But y'all know what I'm talking about. Long trench coat, stocking cap on a hot day like this, drinking Wild Irish Rose, Mad Dog, a Thunderbird out of brown paper sack, sleeping under a cardboard box. Yes, that certainly must be an alcoholic, right? And the only reason that's my definition when I got to y'all is that's the only thing that had not yet happened to me. And if I didn't have the family that I had, that's exactly where I would have been. I can stand here tonight in all honesty and tell you that I drank in Wino's Alley in Sandusky, Ohio with them old men when I was a very young guy. Only difference between me and them, I know what it's like to put 50 cents on the wine. Anybody up in here know what I'm talking about? Only difference between me and them old men is there was somebody that would still open the back door for me and there was nobody left to do it for them, right? So what is this thing called alcoholism? No, first thing in the book, doctor's opinion, right? What is the problem, right? I can't fix something if I don't know what's broke, right? So the first thing you're going to tell me, what is the problem, right? I got something called alcoholism, mental, physical, and spiritual, right? So the mental part of it, they call it mental obsession to drink. What is an obsession? I'm a simple guy. A thought so strong that it'll override or overcome any thinking I can raise as a defense against it. What are some of the mental defenses I tried to raise against taking the first drink? I tried common sense. That was stupid. I ain't going to do that again. My grandmother told me when I got sober why that didn't work. She said, boy, you weren't born with none of that. I tried self-knowledge. 1978, I sat in the pump lounge and looked at a kid named Brian, and I told him, I said, if I drank that beer, I ain't going to do one single solitary thing that I told you I got to do today. He looked at me, and he said, then don't drink it. I looked at him and said, don't be stupid. Now that I know that, right, I drank the beer, and I didn't do nothing I was supposed to do that day, right? Self-knowledge avails me nothing, right? I tried fear of consequences I might face if I drank. You ever try that? I wake up in the morning. I'm in my late teens and early 20s. Just a kid. I wake up in the morning. I'm laying in the bed. And I mentally make a list of all the reasons why I ain't drinking today. If I drink today, I'm going to flunk out of school, lose my job, get kicked off the team, girlfriend going to leave me, get thrown out of the house, dirty urine, I'm going to prison. All them things true in my life at one time or another. And if you drink like I drink, usually three or four I'm going on simultaneously. And I would lay in the bed, take a look at the truth, and make the easiest kind of decision there is to make, a decision based on truth. I ain't drinking. I don't want that crap in my life. Therefore, I ain't drinking, and I meant it as much as I mean it tonight. I was not joking. I did not want that stuff in my life. One of the worst statements I ever hear in here is, I'd rather be drunk than sober. Really? Really? Maybe he would. But if you like me, I didn't want that stuff in my life. So I would make that decision, and I would mean it. And then I get out of the bed. And about 30 seconds later, here's the thought. The book calls that sound reasoning. And it is, isn't it? It's sound reasoning. But the book says that parallel to that sound reasoning ran some insanely, circle the word insanely, trivial excuse to take a drink. Here's the thought I have 2 minutes later. It's Friday. It's Friday, and you know I have worked all week, which for me is 3 days. None of this stuff is really my fault. This is the United States of America. It is legal to drink alcohol, and by God, I deserve, is anybody following me? I deserve a beer. Note this, the sound reasoning from 5 minutes ago never comes back. Such is the power of obsession. If I had the power to stop that on my own, I'd have done so. What I'm talking about is powerlessness. So now I'm only going to have one. I pick up the drink and I drink it, and the second part of the disease becomes active. Silkworm called it the phenomenon of craving. Simple story. I'm out cutting my grass. It's a true story. I'm like 10 years sober. I'm cutting my grass on a 90-degree day. So is my non-alcoholic next-door neighbor. I'm watching him. He got hot and thirsty, shut his lawnmower off. He got off of it. He walked over to his deck. He flipped open a cooler. It's full of cold beer. He pulled out a cold one. He popped the top on her. He sucked it down. It quenched his thirst. And nobody in here is going to believe it, but I've seen this with my own two eyes. With that full cooler of beer still sitting there, that man actually got back on his lawnmower and finished cutting his grass. I'm over here. I'm 10 years sober, and I'm going... Because my next door neighbor ain't like me. Because if I get off of my lawnmower and I pop a top on the cold one and I suck her down, it does not quench my thirst. What it does to me, and maybe to you, if you knew, follow me, is it makes me thirstier. And I ain't cutting. Grass cutting is over at the Coleman house. My lawnmower be in that same spot 2 weeks from now when I get out of the county. Because that's how I roll. Right? Spiritual malady, soul sickness. My disease is rooted in selfishness and self-centeredness. I'm a guy who made a conscious decision at the age of 14 to live my life my way. To live my life my way. No God, no you, no nobody else. I got everything that I need, and I'm going to do what I want. I was not raised that way. So as a result of that, I began to try to control and manipulate the people, places, and things in my life to satisfy what Bill Wilson talks about in the 12 and 12, my basic instincts, the need for sex, security, right, companionship, all of those things, by controlling and manipulating the people around me. And if you've tried that, and if you're in this room, I'm quite sure you have, there's a problem with that, isn't there? That the people, places, and things around you refuse to cooperate. And so as a result of that, I become even more restless and irritable and discontented, and I push or pull harder to try to get my way. It still doesn't work, right? And I found out at the age of 14 that if I pour alcohol on restless, irritable, discontented, and afraid, I get a sense of what Dr. Silkworth called ease and comfort. You can see it. You've been in a bar room. You watch a man walk in there, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That finger goes up. That shot comes down there. He throws her down, and this is what he does. This disease of mind, body, and spirit is called alcoholism. And I don't know if you got it, but I definitely got it, and I don't treat it. Death, imprisonment, or commitment are guaranteed me. And if you're new here and you don't believe believer, understand that. You stay here and watch what happens to the people who don't. I'm now 56 years old. I was born in the city of Sandusky, Ohio. I was the second of three boys. I was raised in a Christian home. I had as fine a mother and father that ever graced this earth. I am the son of Pete and Evelyn Coleman. My father worked for General Motors. My mother worked for Chrysler. I'm retired from Ford. And I say, you know, there's a lot of craziness in the house, but we had really nice cars. But anyway, my mother was the president of Ohio Baptist Women's Convention. There's a lot of people from Atlanta, Georgia that you would see and would have seen on TV back in the 60s. Them people been in my house. My mother was a power. My mother was the highest ranking woman in Chrysler Corporation. I worked in Dearborn at Ford's World Headquarters before I retired, and they called us the best and the brightest. I never worked with anybody as smart as my mother. My mother went from kindergarten to a master's degree at Bowling Green State University and never got a B. Smartest person I've ever known. My mother was a brilliant lady. My mother was a person when she walked in the room, people took notice, people sat up straight. That was the mother that I had. And I made that lady my enemy. I made her my enemy. No. My dad was the commissioner of the youth football and baseball leagues in our town. My mother's brother was a two-term mayor of the city of Sandusky. That's the kind of family that I come from. The principles that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous were not only taught in my family, they were demonstrated. Right? Bill Wilson called the 12 steps a set of principles spiritual in nature. I was introduced to them principles long before I went off to school. In our house, they told us honesty is the best policy. A real man is always honest with himself and other people. To thine own self be true. Right? In my house, maybe in yours, we got automatic whoopings when we got caught lying. Did that happen to anybody else's house in here? That's step one. The principle of step one is honesty. I learned it at the end of a hickory stick. My mother said to me, I'm 7 years old. She said, Kenny, come here. I'm worried about you. She said, contrary to what you seem to believe, the sun don't rise when you wake up and set when you go to bed. She said, look out the window and tell me what you see. Sky, grass, dogs, cats, people, cars. She said, you think this just popped up out of nowhere? She said, there's a power that's greater than you that created all this, and all you have to do is be willing to believe that step two. In our house, they said, if you will make a decision to put your life in the hands of the power that created all of this, in my house, they call that power God. She said, you will always have what you need no matter what happens outside or around you. She was telling us the answer is inside, it's not outside, step three. In our house, they told us, anytime you got a problem, no matter how bad you think it is, come talk to us about it. A problem shared is a problem half solved. You're only as sick as your secrets. Anybody ever heard that before? That is steps four and five. My mother used to say, the biggest room in a human being's life is the room for improvement. If you can make B's, you can make A's. If you can make second team, you can make first team. And if you'll ask that power for help to grow in any area in your life, the power will always help you. That's what the power does. The power is good, steps six and seven. In our house, they told us anytime you heard harm or wrong, somebody else, go make right the wrong you've done. You owe an apology, make it your time, give it your own money, pay it, clean up your mess. That's what responsible people do. Anybody ever heard that before? Steps eight and nine. My mother used to say, you can never go forward in this life if you don't know where you are today and what you need to work on to get wherever it is you want to go. How can you go somewhere if you don't know where you are? Try that sometime. Try it sometime. I read a book about Socrates when I was a junior in high school. Socrates said, the unexamined life is a waste. Step 10. Our grandmother said, the secret to having a good day is simple. When you wake up in the morning, roll out of bed onto your knees, say one word, please. As you go through the day and you don't know what to do, ask that power to help you. And at night, before you get back into bed, hit your knees again, say two words, thank you. Step 11, conscious contact with God. And in our house, they told us the greatest thing we could do with our lives was not acquire money and material things. It was to be of service to others. We were taught to follow the golden rule. Talk to folk the way you want to be talked to. Treat folk the way you want to be treated. Respect your elders and offer to share what you have with others before you have your own. Be of service to your fellow man. Step 12. When I got on the bus to go to kindergarten, I was already armed with a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that I now know as the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I recognized them very quickly when I got here. For those of you who are new, I got a message for you. Spiritually principled living did not originate in Akron, Ohio in 1935. Those principles are ancient, and there's a lot of people who live like that every day out there. And check this out. They don't expect a pat on the back for it either. This is the only place in the world where I got to take a 40-year-old man and sit him down and say, look, I want you to do something nice for somebody today, but if you tell anybody, it doesn't count. Are you kidding me right now? Right? Such is the depth of the selfishness and self-centeredness of the alcoholic. unbelievable. Right? I went to see my grandmother. I was 7 months sober. I said, Mama, guess what? She said, what? I said, I paid my bills 7 months in a row. She said, I paid mine 72 years in a row. It's astounding to me. Right? I sit in AA meetings, and we're so arrogant. You ever hear this? Boy, those earth people out there sure could use what we have in here. Where do you think we got it? Not them drunks over in Akron in 1935. Thank God for Ann Smith, who was a non-alcoholic. Thank God for William D. Silkworth, who was a non-alcoholic. Thank God for John D. Rockefeller. None of these people were alcoholic. It's a spiritual way of life. So you're probably thinking to yourself, well, Ken, if you had all that before you went off to kindergarten, what are you doing speaking at an AA meeting tonight? I bet you know the answer to that too, don't you? I never did any of it. I talked about it a lot. You ever be down at the bar room and there'd be some drunk in there quoting scripture? That was me. I'd be down at Brownlee's Tavern Friday night. Every weekend at Brownlee's, somebody would have a meltdown. And they would have a meltdown usually because they were losing their job, going to jail, or getting divorced, because that's what we did down at Brownlee's on a regular basis. And Kent would stagger over with a drink in his hand as this man is sitting here sobbing, and I'd say something like this. Luke chapter 5, verses 17 to 19. I'm giving spiritual guidance down to Brownlee's Tavern. And I didn't stop there. I give marital advice down to Brownlee's. Now, I had never had a wife, but I didn't see how that made a difference. When my life savings laying on the bar, I give financial guidance down to Brownlee's. My daddy called me a walking encyclopedia of perfectly useless information. Why? Because none of it was born of my experience. Experience is a thing of supreme value. I'm a head guy. I'm a book knowledge guy. I'm a parrot. And I can be that in here. I can walk around here repeating things I hear in meetings that have no basis in Alcoholics Anonymous and that are actually contradictory to the program of recovery. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. It came out of treatment center. That ain't AA. Treatment used to be 30 days. A successful outcome when treatment started was 120 days. So when you left, they said, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. We can check you off and get money for next year. I'm telling you, that's where it came from. So I'm giving new people the impression that there's something magical about 90 days. And I heard that when I was new. And I went to them old timers in my group. I said, how long do I have to come to these meetings? John looked at me and said, till you decide you want to drink again. I said, well, how about 90 meetings in 90 days? He said, what? He said, we don't have quarterly recovery here. Be careful. Be careful. My first sponsor taught me something that stood me well to this day. He said, if it ain't in the book, leave it alone. Because you're playing, you bet your life in here. As a kid, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. I always felt always a half a step behind everybody else. My own. I don't know why I felt that way, and I don't care. I'm not here to analyze myself. I can tell you that's the way it was. If the car is in the ditch, we could sit around all night talking about how the car got in the ditch. Somebody needed to figure out how to get a record and get the car out the ditch. I'm a solution-oriented guy. I ain't a problem-oriented guy. I always felt less than. I was terrified of everything. That's just how it was for me. I had an older brother who was the total opposite of me. We were raised in the same house. We had the same parents, same experiences, and he walked into a room and he owned it. But that's how it was for me. So I start looking for something. I got this. I like how my sponsor calls it an angst. I've got this thing in me, and it seems to grow in intensity every day. I become a little more afraid, a little more nervous, and I can't figure out what it is. So I start looking for an answer. I became an avid I could read before I went to school. I watch TV, movies, I daydream. I become a character. I'm somebody else, someplace else, doing something else. The reality of my own life became an uncomfortable and untenable place for me, and I start looking for escape. I didn't know that at the time. My friend Ralph always says, baffling feature of alcoholism is you can't see what it's doing to you until you're free of it. So what I'm telling you now is looking in the rearview mirror. When I'm living in it, I don't see none of this. So I'm looking for escape. My first real drink of choice was my older brother. I had an older brother. I come from a football family. And it's funny, it was the NFL draft was yesterday. My family played football. My father played for West Virginia State. My uncle Bo played for Penn State. I had two cousins that played in the National Football League for over 10 years. That's what my family do. We do it on Saturdays and Sundays in front of 100,000 people. We was raised to do it. There's no bearskin rug pictures of the Coleman boys. We was in a diaper in a three-point stance in the middle of the living room. I ain't no joke. That was my daddy. We was raised to play football. I had a brother that was 6'2", 215 pounds, and could run a 4.440 on a cinder track when he was 16 years old. And he was a running back, big running back. Ohio make big running backs. And we had a coach, his name was Woody Hayes, and Woody Hayes came to our home. My brother was going to go to the University of Michigan. I had a cousin who was an All-American at the University of Michigan, played in the NFL for 11 years. My brother was going to go to Michigan. Woody Hayes came to my house, talked to him for 10 minutes, and he was going to Ohio State. And that's the way that thing went down. And I followed my brother everywhere that he went. I lived in his shadow. I had ease and comfort in his shadow. I was not Kent Coleman. I was Brian's brother, and it was a comfortable place for me to be. Nobody expected me to be, do, or say anything. And that, man, I lived it. I lived there. I just followed him everywhere he went. Last weekend in August 1972, we go to scrimmage the Maslin Tigers. And my brother suffers a head injury late in the scrimmage. He walks to the sidelines. He collapses. He is not breathing. He goes into a coma Saturday night, 9 hours of brain surgery on Monday. He died Wednesday, September the 5th, 1972. I remember like it was yesterday. I could tell you everything that happened from the moment I woke up that day to the moment I closed my eyes. Is that what made me alcoholic? Absolutely not. Stop any car out on the street. Tragedies happen. People live. People die. What did it do for me besides break my heart? It seemed to accentuate the feelings of difference I already had. Because now everywhere that I go, there's an elephant in the room, ain't there? It's 1972, not 2016. They didn't send counselors to the high school to help us deal with that. This almost killed my mother and father. And I ain't going to tell you what it did to my grandparents. Changed the culture of sports in my whole town from that day to this. And so now everywhere I go, the guy whose brother died is in the room and nobody knows what to say. The awkward silence is there. So I feel even more separate from you. My mom used to talk to me a lot after my brother died, and my mom would tell me stuff like, you know, God's going to really be good to you. I'm 13 years old. So I start hanging around guys my own age. And we stand on the street corner. What are we talking about? What 13-year-old, 1972, drinking beer, smoking weed, and climbing in and out of girls' bedroom windows in the middle of the night. And I was batting 0-0-0. I had a mother that didn't play none of that. I didn't know what they was talking about, but I don't let them know I don't know what they're talking about, right? Y'all remember them dogs they used to put in the back window of the car with the head and go like this? That's me, right? Oh, yeah, I did. Ain't that fun? I'm 13 years old. I'm telling people I've been places I ain't been. I know people I don't know, and I've done things I haven't done. I was addicted to acceptance long before I picked up a drink of alcohol. I am willing to compromise everything that I've been taught and believed to be true to gain your acceptance. I will lie. I will do whatever that it takes. And that's a snapshot of Ken at age 13. You know, my mom is telling me, you know, you're going to have a really good life. God's going to bless you, know. And I'm telling my mother, I ain't got no desire to be a service to God, you or anybody else. You want to know what I want out of life? I can tell you in 30 seconds. I want mine. I want to get in my way, and I'm going to need you to leave me alone while I'm doing it. And my mom would shake her head, and you know they get that sad look on their face. Oh, we didn't raise you that way. And I'm like, well, if you don't think my way going to work, get out the way and watch me roll, because I'm about to do it, you know. And one of the gifts God did give me is I did well in school. I'm a guy, school comes easy for me. I'm not challenged by school. I'm a straight-A student with no effort. My first sponsor, I was riding in the car with my first sponsor, Bill, one day, and I told him something. I don't remember what it was. And he stopped the car, and he turned and he looked at me, and he said, I'm going to tell you something. I don't ever want you to forget it. He said, son, anytime you're in a room alone, all your enemies are there. And what he's referring to is my thinking. And so I'm 13 years old. I'm sitting in study hall at Sandusky High School, and I have a visit from the enemy, my thinking. Here's the thought that came to me. These people in here breaking their neck trying to get B's and C's, taking general math and science. I'm taking calculus, physics, fourth year Latin, fourth year English. I'm in the 10th grade. I'm getting straight A's, and I'm sleeping in class. You know, it just might be entirely possible that I know everything. I had no evidence to support that thought as being true. I accepted it as a fact, left the room, and took action on it. I actually went home and told my mother and dad that. I thought they ought to know. It would change things around the house a little bit, I thought. What happened is my dad came up off the couch kind of quick. Now, I was scared of my daddy. My daddy played football when he didn't have face masks. My father was a decorated Korean War veteran. Purple Heart, Bronze Star, right? My dad was in the woods in Korea. I was scared of my dad. So when he started coming up off the couch, I decided not to stay and wait and see what he wanted. So I broke for the screen door. I got out and I closed the screen door. You know, to the day my daddy died, I never asked him what he intended to do to me. He must have been thinking, look what we got in the house. I'm going to kill it. But anyway, I got out the screen door and I looked at my dad. And he looked at me and he pointed his finger at me. He said, boy, so I'm going to tell you something, Kenny. He said, you have a hard life. He said, because don't nobody know everything. And I stood there and I laughed in his face. A significant day in my life. On that day, I closed the door. Our book says honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are the three essentials of recovery. And they are indispensable. I believe that they're the three essentials of right living. And I don't believe that as an ongoing human concern, I can grow and progress in my life without any of those three things. On that day, I closed the door. Everybody in my life's now an idiot. My mother, my father, the preacher, the teacher, later on the police, the judges, the lawyer, the probation, the PO. You can't tell me, because if I don't know it, it ain't worth knowing. Become my philosophy of life. I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, and according to my mother, mean as a rattlesnake, I had yet to take a drink of alcohol. I tell people I was the perfectly tilled soil for the disease of alcoholism. All I had to do was water it. And one day I did. I got in the car with a guy whose life I lived in my head. I don't live in the real world with the rest of you. I live in my head. This guy is 2 years older than me. He's the captain of the basketball team. He's my best friend's older brother. We all played basketball at Sandusky High School. Snazzy car, pocket full of money. He runs around with the kind of girls I run away from when I see him coming down the hall. And I got in the car with Johnny. He said, hey, Coleman, you want to get something to drink? I have been warned about drinking. Alcoholism does not run in my family. It gallops. And I have been told we do not do alcohol well. Look at your Uncle Ed. Look at you. Both sides of my family are rife with this thing. We used to have a family reunion. We used to get two shelters out at the park. One for the good folk and one for the rest of us. And a lot of cirrhosis, death in my family. It's killed a lot of people. And if Johnny had said to me that day, let's go rob the carry out, I guarantee you I would have done it. That's a little sense of self I had. And we went through the drive-thru and we bought 10 quarts of Schlitz Malt Liquor Bull. Now, if you're young in here, you don't know what a quart is. It preceded the 40 ounce. There was 32 ounces of beer. He said, five for you and five for me. And we dropped the convertible top on that beautiful Pontiac. And we cranked up the music and rode through the streets of Sandusky and we drank that beer and my life changed. And I drank all five of them quarts. I learned a couple things that day. I have a great capacity to consume huge amounts of alcohol when I was a young guy. That changed later as my disease progressed. But I could drink a lot. I saw that. And I saw that it bought me some respect from him. We went behind the Derrick Apartments. People surrounded the car. The music is blasting. This is where the thugs hung out in my time. I ain't said five words in public in the last 3 years. I looked at Johnny. I said, turn that music down. I said, because there's a few things I want to tell a few people who are present here this afternoon that I've been wanting to tell them for quite some time. I went around that circle of hoodlums, told each and every one of them what I thought of them and what they needed to do, in my opinion, to improve themselves. The reaction of the guys around the car, dudes is leaning in the car, hugging me, saying, see, I told you Coleman all right. I told you he's one of us. He's loosened up. He's drinking. He's one of the boys. Boom. End of separation. Right? I now have the acceptance of the people whose acceptance I want the most. That ain't mom and dad. That's them drive-by shooters behind the Derrick Apartments. Alcohol equals success, and you better believe I connected the dot. We left from there. We went over to the home of some of them girls he run around with, I run away from. I walked in. Never been over there in my life. I walked into that home like I was paying the mortgage. I sat down at the dining room table, and I made eye contact. What I still believe is the finest girl to graduate from Sandusky High School in its 175-year history. I had never even breathed in her direction, much less said hello. And I looked at her, and she looked up at me, and I said, come here. And she got up and started walking toward me. Any sane human being at this point would probably think, gee, Ken, if you weren't so shy and scared, look what you could have done just by speaking up. Is that what I thought? Nope. If you're new here, follow me. Here's what I thought. If you had been drinking before now, look what you could have done. Is anybody following this? Look what you've been missing. I immediately attributed it to drinking. Right? Now, this is an honest program, and I'm going to be honest with y'all tonight. When she got over there to me, I had a faintest idea what to do with her. I don't think that far ahead when I'm drinking. But guys like me watch a lot of TV. And on TV, they go like this. So I did. And she sat down in my lap. And my life changed again. Right? And the upshoot to that entire day is on that day alcohol did for me what I could not do for myself. Looking back at it now, I'm going to make a statement, and it is true. For the first time in my life, I felt whole. And that is a very powerful thing. And alcohol ain't supposed to do that. Right. What happened the rest of that day, I'll give you the rest of my drinking history. We can get out of this thing and start coming down the home stretch. Drink trouble. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they ain't been to jail, had DWIs and all of that stuff. And you don't have to. You can get off the elevator at any floor. The price of admission here is not the penitentiary. It is honesty. But that ain't my experience. If this was a beer, and I stood here tonight and took a drink, a cop would drop right out of that light and land in the middle of the floor. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about, don't you? Whatever can happen will happen. Oh, my God. I have no idea what went on the next 4 or 5 hours, according to eyewitnesses at the house. I came in, threw up all over the house, and passed out. Next thing I remember is my mom knocking on that bedroom door. You know how they do. Come on here, clean up this mess. You know you've been drinking. Blah, 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 blah. I staggered into the hallway in what later years would be my drinking uniform, my underwear. And Father Pete in Canada used to say, I had a hangover you could take out and look at. I'm dying. I go in the bathroom, lock the door. She's still screaming in the hallway. I put my hands on the bathroom sink. I look through bloodshot eyes in the mirror, and this is what I said. Man, oh, man, I can't wait to do that again. Is anybody following me? Grounded for life is what was being discussed in the living room and how this sentence was. I got grounded for life. And so I had a meeting with myself in the bathroom. Prior to AA, I loved to have a meeting with myself because I could solve most anything that was going on, I found. If you new in here, get a sponsor, all right? So I'm having a meeting with myself. Here's what I come up with. Okay, Kent, you got drunk? Yep. You got sick? Yep. You got grounded for life. All these things are true. Now, the reason you got grounded for life, Kent, is not because you got drunk. It is because you got sick. So what you got to do is learn how to drink without getting sick. Is anybody? Are you kidding me right now? Right? The big book talks about a man who puts his hand on a hot stove. He burns his hand. He don't put his hand on a hot stove again. I'm in there right now. My hand is still on fire, and I'm planning to put it on there again. Is anybody following me? The insidious insanity of alcoholism. I drink for the effect produced by alcohol. That's what I'm chasing. And I'm willing to go through anything I got to go through to get that. And for the next 18, and I was gone. And for the next 18 years, I did. I'm a parent abuser. 16 years old, I got a car. I had a 1 o'clock curfew. I went to Columbus, got me a fake ID down at Ohio State. Said I was 22 years old. I put on a 3-piece suit. I got a 1 o'clock curfew. I put on a 3-piece suit. I drove an hour to Toledo, Ohio, and I went to a place on the radio they called the All Beautiful Shea Nightclub. It ain't what it was when I got there, but whatever. At 1 o'clock, when I'm supposed to be home, I'm drinking a gin and juice and slow dragging with a woman older than my mother. I come home at 4 o'clock in the morning, living room lamp is on, I walk in the front door, my mother's sitting on the couch. She was always up when I come home. And I used to say to my mother, why are you up? What is wrong with you? I want you to understand something. I want you to understand, we talk about selfish and self-centered. I am so full of me, I can't even see you. I cannot comprehend the love of a parent for a child. Nobody exists in this universe but me. And everything in it, the only concern I got with it is how it affects me. That's it. And I'm a kid. And my mother got tears running down her face, and she said, buddy, I'm going to tell you something. She says, your parents, we owe you a roof over your head, food to eat, clothes on your back, and education. We've done that. She said, but I got something you can't have, Kenny. That's my peace of mind. She said, you're going to penitentiary or the cemetery, and I got news for you. I ain't going with you. She said, I'm done. Go. Do what you want. I'm giving you to God. I'm done. And this is what I said to my mom. I broke you. I broke you. And I want you to know something, Mama. I'm a little disappointed. You're such a spiritual giant because it wasn't even that hard. And I walked away. And that's how I treated my mother. How you think I treated you? I went to college, was drunk for 5 years, was an animal. I went to Miami of Ohio, was an animal. I did what I wanted when I wanted to who I wanted to do it to. Still making amends to that university today, and they've welcomed me back there to do it. That was in 1977 I went down there. You want to see alcoholism? You should have seen the first day I went to college. Freshman day. Hugging, crying, babies leaving home for the first time. If you wanted to see the effects of alcoholism on my family, all you had to do was watch us. My father unloaded that van like his butt was on fire. He was up I-75 before I got the key in the door. The last thing my father said before he went down the steps of the dormitory, he turned, he looked at me, he said, "Now your mother can sleep. Now your mother can sleep." But I ain't hurting nobody. Got out of college, went to work in an auto plant. You don't need a college degree for that. Bill's story is Kent's story. As my alcoholism progresses, I set my life up to accommodate my drinking. I don't realize it at the time. They had a union in there. And if you don't go to work, and if you're as non-productive as I am, you need a union. That's why I worked there. I could have been working at Procter & Gamble in advertising, had a job that would have made me a millionaire by the time I was 40 years old. I'm working in an auto plant. Alcoholism in my life. I was convicted of driving under the influence of alcohol 7 times in the state of Ohio. I've been arrested for a lot of things. I dropped dead of a heart attack at the age of 26 one day. Just dropped dead. Guys like me do that some. We just dropped dead. My girlfriend kind of freaked out about it, though. Called 911. They put me in the cardiac unit. Tears running down the side of my face. "God, if you let me live, I'll never drink again." My mother's up there telling the doctor, "I already lost my oldest son. I can't lose another one." People everywhere. 48 hours in the cardiac unit, heartbeat stabilized. They put me in a regular room. Here's the thought that came to me. If you knew, follow this. Whoo, that was close. But I'm all right now. This calls for a celebration. And my best drinking buddy, who died as a direct result of this disease, bought booze in that room, and I'm drunk 2 hours out of the cardiac unit. If I had the power to quit drinking on my own, I'd never come to AA. Why should I? The end of my drinking, no baths, no showers. I got a liver that's distended about 7 inches. Every time I take a drink of whiskey, I cough all this white stuff up. My liver and my pancreas will no longer metabolize the alcohol that I'm drinking. What I'm coughing up is pure alcohol. My body is now rejecting what my mind is obsessed with. I'm 32 years old, and I'm dying of alcoholism. Bill Wilson said how dark it is before the dawn. Last 3 years of my drinking, I tried everything I could think of to quit. I quit hanging around them guys. I got the booze out of the house, changed shifts at work, got rid of her, got another her, move over here, move over there, and I'm drunk every day. I went back to church. I used to sit up with a Bible in this hand and a Miller High Life in this hand. I could not shut it off. And the last year of my drinking, I went to a place that I like to call the land of I don't care. No day, no night, no right, no wrong, no good, no evil, no God, no devil. Three most prominent words in my vocabulary are I don't care. Just leave me alone. I don't want to hurt you. Just leave me alone. And I believe that's as far away from God as a human being can get. I believe I was prayed in here. I come out of the pump lounge on a Thursday night. I'm sitting in the car and I had what they call a moment of clarity or a moment of sanity. There's a guy in Cleveland, six-pack Charlie Kitchen. Charlie said that's the moment when God paralyzes the liar in you long enough for you to see the truth. And for the first time in almost 20 years, my head cleared, and this is what I saw. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. You better get some help because you can't do it by yourself, and you better do it now because you're running out of time. Just like that, out of nowhere. And I called my best drinking buddy from college, who's a doctor today, and I owed him $5,000, hadn't paid him a dime, didn't even know if he'd talk to me. His wife answered the phone. She said, "Richard, it's Kent." And that's exactly how she said it. And Rich got on the phone, and I said, "Rich, it's your boy, man. I need some help." And this is what he said to me, and he is not a member of this fellowship. He said, "Man, I've been waiting for this call for 7 or 8 years. Pack a bag. Stay by the phone. I got you." And he is not a member of this fellowship. What he is a wonderful human being. And he called me back, and he said, "Don't go to work. They're going to fire you." He said, "I want you to come down here." He lived in Centerville outside of Dayton. He said, "I'm going to put you in treatment in a place in Xenia, Ohio." Remember the big hospital treatment centers? And it was called Green Hall. I got one of them $25,000 big books. And my brother and his wife drove me down there. I had a case of Genesee beer in the back seat. I got to drinking them cold jennies as we sped down I-75. And I know you ain't going to believe it, but after a couple of them cold jennies, I had a visit from the enemy, my thinking. And here's what the enemy said. You know, I just may have overreacted here. It ain't that bad. Right? I'll pay this tomorrow. You know what I mean, right? What I didn't know is my daddy told my brother, I give you $100, you won't bring that tramp back here. That's a true story. So my brother wanted that hun, he wouldn't turn around. So we got down there. I'm knee-walking drunk when we get to Richard's house. He puts me in his car, and Richard had a Porsche. Richard's house was bigger than this building. And I sat outside his house, and I looked at his house, and I said, damn, what happened to my life, man? I was going to do something, be something. I was smarter than he was. How am I? And he put me in his car, and he bought me a quart of Miller's, and he drove me to treatment. And I had this much left in that quart. We pulled in the parking lot. He put his car in park. He looked at me, got the biggest smile I ever seen on his face. And he said, man, go ahead and finish that quart, man. And don't ask me how I know it, man. He said, that's the last drink you're ever going to take. It was 17th of May, 1992. I've not had another drop of alcohol or anything stronger than an aspirin since that day. And it's because AA works. It's because AA works. It's not because of me. I spent 35 days in a 28-day treatment program. That'll tell you how that went. I got out of detox. They had guys reading out loud stories of their drinking in the street. Counselor looks at me and says, Kent, tell us what you think about what you heard your first day out of detox. I said, I'll tell you what I think about what I heard, Jim. Well, I'm down here for a few days to get help for this small problem I might have. I would like to volunteer my time, services, and energy to help you with these people. These are the sickest people I've ever seen in my life. That one statement got me an extra week of treatment. The next day, they called me down to the nurse's station where my enemy married a nurse who was 28 years sober in AA, hung a sign around my neck this big, and it said, I am not a counselor. I had to wear it for a whole week. I do treatment good. 28 days, they cut my insurance off. They called up to the plant. You know what they said? We don't think Kent's ready to leave the hospital. You know what they said up the plant? We don't either. And they wrote a check for me to stay another week. I got out of treatment. I came home. I started. They told me, you know how they tell you when you leave treatment. Get a sponsor. Get a, oh, yeah, I see you. I got home. I started to play a game. It's called Don't Drink, Go to Meetings, and Don't Do Nothing Else. But I put my arm through a window. I cut an artery in my arm. I start bleeding all over the floor. I put a towel on my arm. I drive myself to the hospital. I run into the emergency room. Doctor comes out, says, come on back, Mr. Coleman. We'll treat you now. I sit there bleeding to death in the emergency room. Look at the doctor and say, no, thank you. I'll just sit here. And I bleed to death in the emergency room. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the emergency room. I've sat in these meetings, and I've watched people die of untreated alcoholism who attend these meetings on a daily basis. The treatment for the disease I suffer from is a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, period. We got a lot of stuff in here that supports that. Meetings, literature, conferences, conventions, workshop. This is the greatest time in the history of AA to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But all those things are not a substitute for the solution, which is the steps. Got to the home in meetings. We have people stand up and they reintroduce themselves. This is, I'm John Doe. I've relapsed. I'm back. We all clap because John's still alive, and we're grateful. But I'll say to John after the meeting, John, can I ask you a couple questions? Sure, Kent. John, did you have a sponsor?
No.
Did you have a home group and a commitment?
No.
Did you apply the 12 steps as written in the book to the best of your ability?
No.
Then what did you relapse from? A relapse is a return to a prior condition. If the prior condition is untreated alcoholism and the treatment is the 12 steps and you haven't worked the 12 steps, I got a message for you. You ain't relapsed. You've continued to drink. We're giving people the impression in here that attendance in these meetings and then drinking is failure in here. We've got a program here. This is not an attendance, a social program. It's not a self-help program. This is a 12-step program. And we got to be careful about that. Because people are getting the impression that AA don't work when they don't do anything. It's not a relapse. That's continued drinking. I went to 250 meetings in 3 months and ended up in the parking lot of Daly's Pub in downtown Sandusky, vibrating. I wanted to drink so much. A guy at work said to me, for God's sake, go take a drink. You're driving us all crazy. Because when I stopped drinking, I thought alcohol was the problem. And I ain't drinking. And I want to kill everybody around me. See, alcohol's not the problem. I didn't understand. I got alcoholism. My problem is untenable sobriety. I can't live sober. Booze was an answer for me till it turned on me. I don't know how to live sober. And I've been to 250 meetings in 3 months, and I'm vibrating. And I'm thinking, what am I, some kind of freak? I go to these meetings every day. I said my first prayer in that car. God, what am I doing wrong 3 months sober? Like a lightning bolt, I got the answer. What are you doing right? If you go to that many meetings, you hear it every day, don't you? Get a sponsor, read the book, work the steps, get a home group, help. I didn't do none of that. I treated AA like a cigarette-smoking, donut-dunking coffee clutch. And instead of going into Daly's Pub, from which I believe I would have never come out, I turned the key in that ignition because I had been to all the meetings. I knew where to go and I knew who to go to. And I thought, I'm going to ask Bill or Kenny. Bill was the guy, and John, the old-timer at my group, said, there's a man in Lorraine who specializes in guys like you. What do you mean specialize in guys like me? That's 25 miles from here. And I went to hear Finley lead one night. I thought to myself, over your dead body, and never am I asking that man to help me. And my first sponsor was a man who spent his life traveling around the world doing big book. And some of y'all know who Finley is. And I went to that meeting, and I was looking for him or Kenny Bombalicki, and I walked in the door, and the two of them were sitting together at the end of a table laughing at me as I came in the door. And I walked to them, and I asked them if they would help me. And here's what they told me. Bill said, we'll take you through the steps of this book as outlined by the founders, and we'll show you how we live these steps in our daily life. He said, I want you to bury yourself knee-deep. He said, no, scratch that. He said, I want you to bury yourself shoulder-deep in this thing called AA so you can't teeter and fall. And I've been shoulder-deep in AA from that day to this day. And they took me through the steps of this program out of the book as I try to live them in my life today. My mom died. I was 2 years sober. Got to make amends to my mom. And Bill wouldn't let me do it until she was almost ready to go. He said, I want you to go into that house and I want you to demonstrate. I don't want you talking. And my mom saw me go to all those meetings. She saw me bring my first sponsees into her house and talk about God and read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous at her kitchen table. My mama saw me put on a shirt and a tie and go speak at AA meetings when I didn't even have a suit. And when I went to make that amends, I had a big speech planned out, and the only thing that came out was, Mom, I'm sorry. And my mom looked at me. She had the biggest brown eyes I ever seen. And my mom beamed at me. And she said, I forgive you. She said, I want you to promise me something, Kenny. I want you to promise me you'll stay with those people in AA. They were the answer to our prayers. They were able to do for you what we could not. I promised her that I would, and I have. My mom died holding my hands and looking in my eyes in a hospital room full of my family. And I had a big family, and they was calling her name. And my uncle stood in the back of the room and said, don't call her no more because she ain't going to look away from him. That's how she want to go. That's how my mama left this earth. And I've been blessed a billion times over since then. And if I never got nothing else, I want you to know something tonight that was enough. Thank God for the fellowship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad died. I was 18 years sober. My dad saw me get married. My ex-wife is sober longer than me. He saw the birth of both of my daughters. My daughters loved my daddy. Oh, my God, it was sickening. My oldest daughter was little, and she came home from over there, and she said, Daddy, is granddaddy your daddy? I said, absolutely not. I said, granddaddy is a fictional character. That is not the same man that lived in the house that I lived in. And I had a great time. God, my father, I was the last person with my father before he died. And when my daddy died, there was nothing left on the table. And my daddy told me one time that I had made him hang his head. My father fought for this country. He worked for General Motors for 42 years and never missed a day's work. And he looked at me one day because I had done something that was on the front page of the newspaper. He said, for the first time in my adult life, I hung my head today. When I was sober a year, there was a guy at General Motors in the program named Joe. And My father walked up to Joe and said, hey, Joe, do you know my boy? Joe said, yeah, Pete, I know your boy. And he said, your dad looked at me and he said, ain't he something? Don't talk to me about what can't happen here. Don't talk to me. I got divorced at 20 years sober, and I thank God for y'all. I thank God for y'all. I was a poly and them was in Akron. I had right 2 weeks before I moved to Vegas, and I was in a million pieces. But God worked with the broken, I'm going to tell you. And I lived in Vegas for almost 2 years, and then my daughters wanted me to, I wanted to come home too. It was too far away. We said we would try it, then, so I came back home, and I'm home now. My oldest daughter is a sophomore at Bowling Green, and my baby is a freshman in high school, and daddy is there for all her stuff. And my ex-wife is sober 26 years. She a good person. Right? I got some stuff going on today. Right? I want you to understand something if you knew. Sobriety is not an absence or immunity from the vicissitudes of life. Well, come to your next door neighbor's house. It's coming to your house. Buckle up. Buckle up because it's coming. Life is coming. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm excited because my relationship with God, when I go through what I'm going through right now, my relationship with God is going to be stronger than ever. That is my experience. That is not theory because I've been through a whole lot worse than I'm going through. What I'm going through right now is just job stuff, life stuff, right, you know. But, man, I'm going to come out of this more spiritually connected than before. They gave me a tape of a man named Warren Chisholm Sr., 12th man in AA in Cleveland. In that tape, Warren Chisholm Sr. made this statement that anyone who comes here who is willing to practice the principles and precepts of this program as outlined by the founders in the big book need never drink again. I went to Finley. He was a friend of Finley's. I said, he can't say that, never drink again. Bill said, yes, he can, and I'm going to tell you why. He said, because this is a spiritual program, and God doesn't fail. If this don't work for you, it's because you have not fulfilled the conditions that have been laid down. You must participate. I must participate in my own recovery. God doesn't fail. Those who do get, and those who don't. And it's just that simple. If I said anything that helped anybody tonight, thank God. Don't thank me. And if I didn't say nothing to help you tonight, guess what? Come here, Bill and Polly, this weekend. God does not make too hard turns with those who seek him. God could and would, if he were sought. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Good night.